Hello, Cinnabar Moths, or any kind of moth you'd like to be. Welcome to the Writer's Triangle Cinnabar Moths podcast about all things publishing and books. Today we are here with Steve Griffiths, author of Kill Sequence. How are you doing today, Steve?
Hi, Rust. I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing quite well, thanks for asking. So, how are you feeling excited about the release of Kill Sequence?
Well, you know, it came out in March of this year. So I've got a lot that I'm excited about at the moment, but you know, the excitement about Kill Sequence is a little bit dated for me now, I guess. It happened. It had the fanfare, lots of nice things said. It's one of the biggest things of my life. But I guess the big fanfare moments gone a little bit now, really. Until Netflix might, obviously. We can hope.
Yeah. So you've already had the experience of the initial excitement of it's released, it's finally out, and now it's kind of died down a bit. It's like, yeah, that happened. That's cool.
Yeah, exactly. And it was a strange thing because, you know, you'll know this yourself when you're excited about your thing maybe getting published and then it happens. You kind of have this vision of, you know, what one big phone call and one huge day of, wow, I'm getting published. But actually, it was kind of it was almost like a drip feed kind of process. I mean, I had the email saying, wow, I loved it, I'd like to publish it. And then we had a FaceTime call, and that was one high. And then there was the editing process and the contract, and it was lots of little, you know, highs that kind of accumulated, and then it was out. And that was another part of it, and then that's it, done. And then you have, and the, you know, reviews come in, and they're highs as well, and you know, a couple of those. It's a strange process. It's not quite how I envisioned it, but it's been wonderful. I can tell you that.
I'm glad that you've had a wonderful experience with the publication of Kill Sequence. How long ago did you start writing Kill Sequence?
I started it in December 2019, which was pretty much 3 months. I remember all the Christmas decorations were up, and it was about 3 months before we had the COVID lockdown over here in the UK. And as a result, a few people said, oh, you wrote a book during lockdown, did you? And no, I'd already started it. But, yeah. And then it was done. Well, I started submitting it around March 2021. So it was about, I guess, 13, 14 months process.
Okay. So from writing the book to finishing it took about a little over a year.
Yeah.
And then from there to publication took about another year.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. I mean, I started submitting to agents, of course. I went the agent route to start with. So that was around March. I was getting nowhere. I was getting nothing but form rejections. And that was around about the time that I joined Twitter, actually, because I thought, you know, I feel like I'm shooting into the dark here. I didn't really understand that there was this whole indie community and that Twitter was a good way into it. So that's when I kind of joined Twitter and became aware of all these amazing indie presses like Cinnabar Moth and Conservatarian Press. And yeah, it's kind of opened up a whole new world, really. And then I think around about August, I had some interest from indie presses.
Okay, so for you, I'll go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say that was a whole thing in itself. You know, I think I'd read somewhere that actually finding a publisher or an agent is, you know, that's where the real work begins. So, my gosh, is that ever true?
And so it took a bit of a time to find a home for Kill Sequence. And as you just mentioned, it was a lot of work. What would you say that process of going through agents and, you know, querying and all of that, what would you say it was like for you?
It was, well, you know, it was incredibly exciting when I hit send on that first submission email to an agent who I decided, you know, I'd done my research and I decided this is the agent for me, for sure, and he'll definitely sign me up within a week. Obviously, he didn't. In fact, he never even sent me a form of rejection.
Oh, wow.
And then, but hey, that's the way it goes. And then I think I left it a day, and then I sent about, you know, 7 or 8 more out to different agents. And I had a couple of form rejections. And then I realized, well, I'm going to have to do this not quite the machine gun way, but I was starting to realize that it doesn't work like that. You need to fire out to a lot of people to find the right home for it. But it was form rejections all the way. The best thing I had actually was one UK sci-fi agent who actually, it was almost a personalized reply. It said, "Hi, Steve," anyway, so that was a person. That's almost the best you can hope for. And his first and believe it or not, this made me really happy. His first sentence was, "Hi, I've read the chapters. I can't say I loved it." And I thought, well, ouch. at least he's read them.
Yeah, you got that far.
Yeah. So someone read them, and that's, you know, I mean, you're an author yourself, right? So just having someone read your stuff, that's a bit of a high in itself. Even if they openly say I didn't love it,
it's still. I can understand that, because they're saying, you know, the initial hook got me interested at least.
Yeah, I hope. I mean, you got to look at the positives, right?
Yeah, otherwise it'll get to you, right?
Absolutely. And what I realized as well, really, around about that time was, oh my God, they're out. You know, hundreds of thousands of incredibly talented authors out there that you're kind of, in a sense, you're competing against all these incredibly talented people with amazing stories to tell, and you know, a finite number of agents and a finite number of publishers. And I think it's so much more difficult than it was, you know, way back before the internet and Amazon. So it's incredible, you know, it really is. It's an incredible thing to get published full stop, really.
Mm.
Huge.
So you went through this querying process trying to go through agents and not having much luck. And then you eventually found Twitter and learned of the thriving indie community within Twitter. And that's how you discovered Conservatarian Press. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And
several others as well, yeah.
And so what made you decide to publish with Conservatarian Press?
The editor there, the guy that I'd submitted Kill Sequence to, I sent it on a Thursday evening. And now I live in the north of England, in Lancashire, near the Lake District. So I like to spend the occasional weekend camping up in the lakes. And I remember I was going camping this weekend with my family, and sent it to him on a Thursday evening, and he responded and said, "Thanks, got it, I'll have a look as soon as I can." And then on the Monday morning, he came back and said, "I loved it." And I remember reading it about 5 a.m. in bed, and sort of nudging my wife and then showing her this email, because I couldn't quite believe I'd finally had an acceptance. You know, it's a word you just dream of hearing, isn't it? An editor or an agent saying that they love your work. That was the start of it, really. But all because of Twitter. I wouldn't have found those guys, or anyone, if it wasn't for Twitter, really.
Yeah, so you end up querying with them, and you got back, "I love it," and you had that excitement. And that made you choose Conservatarian Press as the place to publish Kill Sequence.
Yeah, I mean, we had, it wasn't quite that straightforward, because we arranged a FaceTime meeting because the editor, it's an American company, but he was actually living, he lives, his name's Tom Wise, great guy, and he lives half the year in Australia and half the year in the States. And he was in Australia, so we had this FaceTime where I think it was 10 p.m. for me and 7 a.m. for him or something like that. We had an hour's chat, and the press he was working with was actually kind of restructuring and rebranding. So there was quite a big delay on moving things forward. And at one point, I actually didn't know if it was going to happen. I thought it was potentially not actually going to happen. But Tom was just, really in love with the characters in Kill Sequence, and he really got what it was about. And we had this really lengthy conversation, and it just felt like, oh my God, he's in my head. He really was in my head. He just got it all. And I think that was what really sold it to me, that these are the right guys. Just because of this conversation where he just, he read between the lines in the right places. He saw the little kind of Easter eggs that I was planting in the book. He just got it. It was amazing, really.
I guess what drew you in was the editor, Tom Wise, and his excitement and his understanding of your story.
Yeah. It's a weird thing, isn't it? I mean, you write something that only lives in your weird head. And you think, well, it only lives in my head, and then when someone reads it and they actually get it, and you have this conversation with someone and they're talking about these characters that only live in your head, and you realize, oh my God, they're in someone else's head now, and they're not mine anymore. They're his now as well. He owns them as well, and in his head they look slightly different. Everything's photographed slightly different. There's a different backing music, It's a different director, but it's still the same. And it started life in my head. It's just a weird feeling, and I love it. It's an incredible thing.
And so you had this excitement and this kind of bond with the editor, and so you end up choosing Conservatarian Press, just like they chose you, and you've gone through the publishing process with them. What would you say has been the most surprising thing about publishing with Conservatarian Press?
I think probably the freedom that they afforded me. I mean, I kind of expected it to be a lot more difficult. I expected it to be, look, this bit's rubbish. You can't have that. You need this character to do this, not that. Kill Sequence is quite a... it's quite highly stylized in terms of how it's written. It's very staccato, and quite simplistic in places as well, but for a reason. It's not an accident. So I think what surprised me was the freedom that they gave me, and the level of understanding that they had of what I was trying to achieve with it. And even, even down to the length of the book, because it's a long one, it was 106,000 words. And they said, well, it's fine. It is what it is. That's how long it is. So during the editing process, I kind of expected a lot to get cut out. And they did, there were a few bits that they said, yeah, we should cut this out because it slows the pace a bit. But at the same time, Tom was saying, there's this scene here, it's a great scene, but it'd be even better if, your character Sean did this or so-and-so did that. So we ended up taking things out, but actually putting things in as well. Mm-hmm. So the word count, it went down from 106,000 words to a whopping 105,000 words. any other editor, I'm sure, would be saying, look, you need to lose another 20,000 words in this. But it just wasn't like that. So, that was really cool.
I think that sounds like a really positive experience, being able to have this level of understanding of your story, a sort of freedom with the story, and then also help with expanding it in ways that match your vision of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this scene as well that he had this idea about, it was one of my favorite scenes, and he said it was one of his favorite scenes. And you know, when he had that suggestion, I made the change, and it's just, you know, it's infinitely better for it. So I can't thank him enough, really.
That's always amazing to hear when editors and authors are able to collaborate to bring a story even more to life in the author's vision.
Definitely, yeah. It was really cool. And he's a great author in himself, by the way. I've read some of his stuff, and yeah, very cool.
And so with the process for bringing Kill Sequence to not just to life on the page, but to life in the form of a published book, what would you say has been the most surprising thing about the publishing process in a general sense?
I think probably, I mean, I touched on it a bit earlier. I guess really the biggest surprise for me has just been how many incredibly talented authors there are. That, you know, really ought to be big five authors. And they just can't get there. And it's not for a lack of talent. It's just because it's such a competitive world now. There's just so many, you know, talented writers and a finite number of publishers. And I don't think I'd ever really appreciated, you know, how many incredible authors there are. So, I mean, I can only imagine how many submissions any publisher has to read, and how many good things you have to kind of say no on, that you think, well, actually, this is really good, but for whatever reason, I'm not going to go with it.
And so for you, the process of querying and kind of through Twitter, learning about the size of the community was the most surprising thing.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense, because if you go back, you know, just a few dozen years, things were quite different in the author and publishing world.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I was reading an interview, I think it was, it might have been Lee Child, and he wrote the first Reacher novel in I think it was the early 90s. And he's from my neck of the woods, by the way. He's only from Kendall, near me. And he was saying he wrote three chapters and sent it to an agent that lived around the corner from Amazon. And he just snapped it up and said, yeah, send me the rest. Oh, that just wouldn't happen now. There's no way that would happen.
Yeah, I can't imagine in modern world being like, oh yeah, I know a guy down the street. I was set up.
I mean, nowadays you can't publish anything that hasn't been edited and polished 60 times. You can't even send it to to anyone.
Right.
So yeah, I think it is a hugely different world. And thanks to Amazon, all these, you know, authors are now working on amazing work. So to get published, it really is a big achievement now. I'm very lucky, put it that way. I think that I'm very lucky.
I think we are also lucky to be able to have the opportunity to read Kill Sequence. You know, luck goes both ways.
Oh, that's so kind.
And so speaking of Kill Sequence and the luck of it being published, you mentioned that it was published in March, and that's when the majority of the excitement with its release actually happened for you.
Yeah.
How did you end up celebrating its release?
What did we do? So my wife and my son and I went to our favourite pub with six or seven of our friends, and we just sat around and drank. the irony was, I mean, this was publication day. This was the actual day publication. But I didn't have any copies of the book. So my wife, knowing that we wouldn't have any copies of the book, because I wanted to have a stack of them on the table, and obviously we couldn't do that, we didn't have any. So my wife went to, I think she went to Asda, which I guess is like Walmart for Americans. And she got a cake with the kill sequence cover printed on the icing.
Oh, wow.
I know, it was amazing. Yeah, so we had that on the table. Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I've never, you know, wow. I didn't know you could do that, but yeah. It's cool.
That does sound quite amazing.
You know, I just couldn't sign it. That was the
thing. I didn't bring any icing along.
Give everyone a slice of cake and sign the top, you know. Wouldn't work.
And so your wife went through the trouble of finding some place to, you know, get the cake and have it personally styled after the cover of Kill Sequence. So I imagine that your wife was very excited about the book's release.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I can't tell you enough about my wife. She's amazing. She's a neonatal nurse. She's been doing that for, you know, 25, 30 years now. So I've aged her now. She's not going to like that. but, I mean, you got to think, she's a neonatal nurse. So she, you know, she saves lives. She looks after premature babies. And she does something that's so consequential and important. And, my God, it just puts things in perspective. I mean, I write silly stories and I sell electronics for a day job. And she's saving lives. But the whole process, she's been so, you know, 100% supportive. And he always insists on reading whatever I've read. And, of course, she always tells me it's wonderful, even if it's not. And, yeah, she was incredibly excited. And my son was as well. I mean, he's 15 and he's a really cool writer himself, actually. He keeps saying he wants to take a year out and write something, and we'll see if he does that. But yeah, they're incredibly supportive family.
I think it's amazing to have a supportive family around you as you go through the process of writing, which can sometimes be a very lonely process.
Yeah, I mean, it's for me, it's not, I quite enjoy the, you know, being on my own. Doing stuff. I always felt really bad though for those two that I was, you know, kind of hidden away in a room all on my own, typing away, and you know, my son was what, 13, 14 at the time, and he knew I was writing a book. But you know, I did feel bad because I thought, well, where's his dad? You know. Shouldn't I be doing something with my son and my wife? So I, you know, you get these pangs of guilt sometimes, but they're so supportive. Yeah, I couldn't have done it without them, really.
I think it's amazing that you're able to make it this far. And I want to ask you, is Kill Sequence your first publication?
It is. Yeah, it is. It is. I've got a couple of short stories coming out. One of them is actually coming out with a new magazine called Sonder, which is Conservatarian Press's own magazine. It might just be an e-zine, I'm not sure. And one of the bits that we actually took out of the original edit of Kill Sequence, I said to Tom, because he's editing it, now maybe I can slightly repurpose this and polish it up a bit, and we'll have it as a kind of deleted scene of Kill Sequence in the magazine. And he loved it, so we did that. So that'll be coming out in a month or two. And then in October, I have another piece of Flash coming out in Cinnabar Moths e-zine called Lake Hornswoggle, which I'm really excited about. That's a fun thing. And that's completely different and standalone. So there's stuff happening, there's stuff coming, and of course I'm working on a second novel, which again is nothing to do with Kill Sequence. It's a whole new thing.
Okay, so it sounds like you've got several projects that are all in the works currently.
Yeah.
And so I want to ask you, what do you hope happens next with Kill Sequence or with these works that you're doing?
Well, I have been asked if I'm going to do a sequel for Kill Sequence. And I think when I was writing Kill Sequence, I definitely had a series in mind. Yeah. Maybe two or three. I'm not so sure right now. I've kind of got the whole plot in my head for the second book. I just don't know. I'm not sure when I'm going to get around to doing it, because I'm so into this other thing that I'm doing. So what's next for Kill Sequence? I don't know. I guess it will be that, you know, when that day when the Netflix contract definitely is going to come for sure. <of course. laughs> How could it not? But yeah, we'll see. Maybe there's going to be a sequel. It's in my head, and I think it's going to have to come out. You know, I can't keep it in there. It'll drive me crazy. I think there will be a sequel. I just don't know when.
Okay, so you currently aren't working on it. You have a different project that's got a different writing story that you're writing and focused on. But the next book in the series for Kill Sequence is there rumbling in the background.
Yeah, it's in my head. It won't shut up. it does that. You know, these characters, they're just there and they won't go away. And they've got plans. Yes.
I mean, the characters demand to be put onto the page, to be brought to life through word.
I know. I mean, they do as well. I mean, I've got these scenes that just magically appear overnight, and I'm like, oh, God. I'm going to make that work. How do I make that one work? and now I start thinking about, well, it'd work if I did this. I could do that. And oh, yeah. So it's definitely bubbling. So we'll see, and I think it could be a positive thing, because it might mean it's a quick book to write if it's all in my head, as it appears to be doing. Then maybe it's something I could run off fairly fast, but we'll see, because this new thing that I'm writing isn't going fast, even though.
I think books are a tricky thing, because even sometimes when you have the story in your head, once you start writing it, you start going, well, what if I change it like this? And you get all these branching ideas that build off of this, these different scenes, and then, you know, putting all that back together.
yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the characters just don't do as they're told. They've always got something else in mind, even though you think you know what they're up to and you think you're in charge. You're not. You just not. they always have a bigger idea, and you always end up having to accommodate what they want to do. It's really annoying sometimes. I mean, when I'm writing, I have so many. I usually know what's going to come in the next 4, 5, 6 chapters, or even the next whole act. You know, I know the beginning, middle, and end of an act.
Right.
And I start writing it. And it's, oh, well, I didn't know that was going to happen. I was like, okay, so now I'm going to weave that into my original plan. And before you know it, your original plan is just shelved. And you think, well, I'll have to use that for a different book, because this is going a completely different way now.
Mm.
And that happened time again. And I'm more of a pantser than anything. So even though I think I know where I'm going with these things, they're kind of... like the kind of targets, you know, I want these characters to get to this place and this scene, and for it all to mean X, Y, and Z, and that's the target, and this is the route that I'm going to take, and you always end up going a completely different route, but you hope that you're going to get to the target, I'd say that's how it is for me when I'm writing and, you know, pantsing. I've got a vague idea, and I want to end up in that place, but you know, God knows. I mean, I can tell you that the first draft of Kill Sequence, I think the second half was bang on as I wrote it, but the first half of Kill Sequence was entirely different.
So the story evolved quite a bit over the time that you were writing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so you've mentioned a few times now that you're writing on another story, and that you have a few flash fiction, shorter stories written that are coming out and such. Are you aiming for writing to be a career path for you?
Oh, I'd love that. I'd love that, Rasta. That's the dream for sure. Realistically, it's probably not realistic, but I would love that. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be rich or anything from it. I just want to be left alone. Left alone. You know, I want the mortgage paid. I want my little study in my little cottage. Everyone to be happy in the family. Lots of family time, but really working hours. I just want to be left alone in a corner, in a dark corner of my study, writing. You know, and that's my dream. It's not fame and fortune. I'd love to do that, but realistically, I can't see it happening.
Well, let's imagine this concept of success now. If Kill Sequence were to become a bestseller, what would you do with that?
Wow. That's such a happy if. Well, definitely, it would be literally what I've just described. We'd pay the mortgage. I think we'd buy a nice little cottage out in the Lake District. Mm-hmm. And I just write day in, day out. And that'd be it. And, genuinely, the fame and fortune thing, no, I don't. I like anonymity, so I wouldn't want the fame and the fortune and everything. I would hide away.
Even if you had the success, you wouldn't want to become famous, well known, like for example Stephen King.
No, I don't think so. I'm too private.
I can understand that, yeah.
I like to skulk around in the background and, you know, listen. Spy. It's, yeah.
You know, you'll be sitting there, you'll be at the pub and you'll see someone pull out a book, it's yours, and like, oh, that's me, but they don't know. That's great.
Yeah. Oh, wonder, you know, what a dream. What a dream. That would be the most awesome thing to do. And I have this plan. We're going to Greece. A Greek island called Rhodes in 3 weeks, and we have this plan. I'm going to take 3 or 4 copies of Kill Sequence. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of these Greek cafe bars, they have little book corners, and you just pick a book up and read it, you know, in the bar on the beach, and you put it back or you replace it with something else.
Right.
So we're going to take a few copies of Kill Sequence and kind of scatter them around the cafes. Okay. And the bars, because who knows where they might end up.
Yeah, it sounds like a fun little adventure for the book, because people will take it, right, and then they'll replace it with a different book, and then they might eventually exchange it for another one someplace else.
Yeah, they could be world travelers, these copies. Who knows where they end up. Maybe I'll stop.
And you mentioned a couple of times the deal from Netflix for Kill Sequence.
Yeah.
And the idea of that. If you were to receive a deal from Netflix, would you want it to be a TV show or a movie?
Ooh. Which one pays the most? It's, you know, I think it lends itself to both, really. I mean, it's quite a cinematic book. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I could imagine it being a 10-part Netflix show as well. I don't know. That's interesting. I don't know. Let's say we'll go movie, because I'm pretty sure that pays better.
Okay.
I can have a bigger cup.
And so we imagine it's going to become a movie. Let's say Netflix approaches you. They say, hey, we want to make Kill Sequence a movie. Do you have an idea of who you'd want to cast for the different roles of the characters?
No, it's well, yeah, yes and no. The main character, Sean Nash, you know, I kind of wrote him as an everyman. So really anyone could play him. He's an English character as well, but anyone could play him. So I never really pictured anyone. My editor, Tom, during that first conversation we had, he said, it's Ewan McGregor, isn't it? And I was like, what? And he goes, do you picture Ewan McGregor, see you? And I'm like, no. No, I do not. But yeah, why not? You know, he'd be good. But no, I don't know why, but I never really kind of visualized Sean, other than he was kind of 6 foot-ish and, you know, dark hair, and he had this scar on his head. You know, pretty much walks around looking a bit confused. But yeah, you know, definitely Ewan McGregor. He's probably getting a bit long in the tooth for it now. But then Michael's a whole different thing. I mean, anyone could play Michael as well. You know, I imagine, given a choice, I would say Pierce Brosnan doing his Bond thing, but all grey haired, or even Hugh Grant or Hugh Laurie. There's so many, you know, brilliant aging actors now that can do, you know, kind of dark with that charming, fun side as well. So,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. I would like Pierce Brosnan or Hugh Grant or Hugh Laurie.
Okay, there you go. And so we imagine. And so you've got a few different people in mind. And so would you imagine, you know, Netflix reaches out to you, says, hey, we want to make this a movie. Do you think you'd want to have a lot of creative control with that process, or do you want to hand it off to them? What are your thoughts about that?
No, I don't particularly need any control over it. I mean, they're the experts, you know. The only thing I would say is, look, whoever you cast, if they're not English, that's okay, but don't have them do an English accent, for God's sake.
Mm.
You know, if it's an Australian actor like Carl Urban, don't do an English accent. Just do your own accent. There's nothing worse than a bad English accent. Drives me crazy. That's all I would say. And beyond that, it's all yours. Good luck.
Yeah, I understand that. I've experienced people trying to different accents that aren't natural to them, and it's just, why? You could just have somebody else do it who's actually has that accent instead, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Do you watch The Boys on Amazon Prime?
No, I don't.
It's an amazing show. It's so much good fun. It's got Carl Urban playing, and I love this program. And it's got Carl Urban, who's an Australian. Or is he a New Zealander? I think he's an Australian. And he's a wonderful actor. And he can do a great American accent. He plays Bones in Star Trek, the movies. But he's playing a Cockney in The Boys. And his Cockney accent is just awful. Like, really awful. And you just think, well, just do it Australian. Why are you doing a bad Cockney accent when you can just do Australian? It doesn't matter. No one cares.
Right.
It's just I think a bad accent is just so distracting.
Yeah, there's an attempt for authenticity, quote unquote authenticity, with the accent, but then it's not an authentic accent. So why bother?
Yeah, exactly. It's off-putting and. It's a shame. Having said all that, you know, if Carl Urban wants to be in Kill Sequence and do an English accent, well, he can do that. I'm okay with that.
Okay.
That is cool.
So now let's imagine, you know, you've gone through this process with kill sequence. You've received the Netflix offer, you've accepted it, and they've gone through the production process, and now Kill Sequence, the movie, is premiering. Would you want to go to the premiere? And if you did, I imagine you'd bring your wife?
Absolutely. I like all this Netflix talk, by the way. Let's keep doing this for a while. Good. This is good. Yeah, it would have to be my wife and my son. And probably I've got a couple of friends that I forced, really forced, to read the occasional chapter. And they were so, and I mean the first draft as well, so they were so kind because they didn't say, Steve, this is the worst thing I've ever read. They didn't say. So I feel like I owe them a premiere as well. But yeah, certainly my wife and son, because just couldn't have done it without them.
Yeah.
And I know my son would love to meet you and McGregor.
Oh, true. Yeah. That makes sense.
And I'm sure my wife would as well.
And I'm sure that might be fun for you as well, right?
Oh yeah, I'd love to. But again, it wouldn't be for me, I don't want to be on the red carpet. I'll be watching from the sides. Mm. I'll have a nice seat in the house. I'll meet everyone afterwards, but yeah, I don't want to be. Spotlight.
So even if you went to the premiere, you wouldn't want to be walking down and seen by people. You'd rather be like any other guest, sort of, except a little bit better because you're the author.
Yeah, yeah. Slightly better treated, you know, the best seats and all that and free drinks. Mm. but yeah, no, I wouldn't want it. I just don't really want the attention.
Okay, so it sounds to me like even with you writing and having these things out in public for people to experience and enjoy, even if your work became very popular, you would still want to have a level of privacy where your day-to-day life isn't really affected by your success.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, really, you know, my ideal is just that I can write and pay the bills and not have to worry about paying the bills. I have no desire for the fame thing. I don't know. I don't understand anyone that does it. I don't really get the fame thing. It just doesn't appeal to me. My son's probably got a very different idea. Very different.
Your son might be very excited if you're famous. You're like, Dad, you're famous. Isn't this awesome?
I know. He would. He would. And I'd be like, oh, God, no, I'm famous. It's weird. It's weird, but it just doesn't appeal, you know. It's just not for me. It's weird for me having my picture on Twitter and things like that, and doing a podcast. You know, that's weird. That's weird for me. That's probably the limit. I'm glad this is only audio, by the way.
Oh yeah, we've had a few people who kept their video up, but we do keep it with video. No video for the actual podcast itself.
Cool. That's a good thing, especially this time of day.
Yeah, I can imagine early mornings aren't necessarily the greatest for, you know, looking fresh and spry for the camera.
No, not for me. Not at all for me. Definitely not. It's funny enough when I have a work call at like 8:40 or something, and I work from home, so. You know, I sometimes have a Teams meeting or a Zoom appointment at 8:30. And my eyes are still red and my face, the muscles in my face just haven't woken up. So, you know, it's horrible. It's horrible for anyone looking at me at that time of the morning. I feel sorry for them.
Yeah, I can understand that. I don't do well mornings either. I'll wake up, I'll look dead, and then, you know, you give me an hour or two and I can fix it all up, but yeah. Until I'm fully going, I'm just not able to do anything about my face and how ugly I look.
Yeah, the muscles just wake up when they want to, don't they? It's I can understand why actors do those facial exercises and everything. Maybe I should do those for meetings. I don't know, but yeah. it takes a while for me.
Well, I'd like to thank you, Steve, for talking with me today and being on the Writer's Triangle despite your, you know, desire for privacy.
No, it's been a lot of fun. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Rasta.
And I'd like to thank all of our beautiful moths for listening. Be sure to buy a Kill Sequence. It's out as of March of this year. Steve, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you for social media? You mentioned Twitter.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter. It's at Steve No, it's not. It's at. Let me start again. At Sequence _ Ready.
Okay. Do you have any other links, perhaps an author website that people could find you, or is it just Twitter?
For now, it's just Twitter. My wife tells me I must have a website, so we're planning to do that. So that will be up in the coming month or two. There will be a website, but for now, it's just Twitter.
Okay. Well, for all of you listening, be sure to visit CinnabarMoth.com, where you can check out the transcripts, and we'll also have the link to Steve's social media, in the Twitter account. Steve, again, thank you for talking to me today. It's been a pleasure having you on.
Thank you. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you.